Sorry. Bava Basra is a very interesting Masechta. There is something very odd about the fact that we're starting in the beginning of the first parak, but it's not odd that we're starting in the first parak as much as it's odd that the beginning of the first parak is the beginning of the Masechta. If I were to tell you, one of the things that I'd like to do, although it's not going to work so well this year, is I'd like to learn Yerushalmi, and I'd like to learn Tosefta when we do Sugyos, which we might very well do, except for this is extraordinarily difficult Yerushalmi to learn. For those of you who know anything about Yerushalmi, and Yerushalmi Nezikin is a different professor, Rav Shol Lieberman, claimed, he wrote a famous article about Talmud Shel Kesarian, that the Masechtas of Nezikin, Bava Kamba, Metzia Bava Basra, and the Yerushalmi are totally different than the rest of Yerushalmi, and the question is why, and he hypothesized that it was edited in a different place. So there's very little, they're very short. If Yerushalmi is already short to start with, Yerushalmi Nezikin is even shorter. But if I were to tell you, I want you to go out, as a way of introduction and learn Tosefta, on that relates to the first parak of Mishnayos of Bava Basra, if you went to the back of your Gemara, you would find something very odd. There would be absolutely no Tosefta on the first parak. Right? The first Tosefta, Bava Basra, starts with Lo Yachpor, which is the second parak. So the question is, what's going on? And this really is a segue into realizing there's something unusual about Maseches Bava Basra, which is, I would start first with the following. There is a debate amongst the Amoraim, it's cited in a couple of places in the Bavli, as to whether all of Maseches Nezikin is one Masechta or it's three Masechtas. And the nafkamina would be that when you have two Stam Mishnayos, when you have a Stam Mishnah and then you have a Machlokas recorded in the Mishnah, so the rule is that when there's a Stam V'yachar Kach Machlokas, so we don't paskin like the Stam Mishnah necessarily, because Rebbe taught the Stam Mishnah, which would normally mean we would paskin that way, but then he taught it as a Machlokas, which means he basically was not accepting necessarily the opinion of the anonymous Mishnah. Whereas if it's a Machlokas followed by a Stam, it means Rebbe reached the conclusion when he taught the Stam Mishnah to his Talmidim that was in fact the Maskana, that was the Halacha. Now, the Gemara acknowledges there's no Seder to Masechtos and Shas. Meaning, if you find a Mishnah in Gittin, and a Mishnah in Kiddushin, and in our tradition, at least, Gittin comes before Kiddushin, even though that's not the normal sequence in any individual's life. Hopefully, they only experience one. But Gittin comes before Kiddushin, so if you have a Stam Mishnah in Gittin, and you have a Machlokas in Kiddushin, or vice versa, it tells you nothing about how Rebbe wanted us to paskin, because there's no Seder to the Masechtos. In fact, the reason why Kiddushin, anyone know why Kiddushin is after Gittin? And don't tell me the joke. It's a famous joke, but not talking about, the joke, right? Why is Maseches Gittin before Maseches Kiddushin? Because the Kaddish Baruch Hu created the refuah before the Mahalah. That's the joke in the Beis Medrash. But why isn't Gittin before Kiddushin? The answer is because they're more prakim. The order that our printings and our, even maybe our manuscripts has, is just the number of prakim. So Seder Nashim is 16, 13, 11, 9, 9, 9, 4. Kiddushin is almost as long in the Gemara as Gittin, but it's only got four prakim Mishnayos. That's how they got ordered. So you can't tell anything. Except for, so the question is Maseches Nezikin, what we know is Baba Metzia, Baba Kam, Baba Metzia, Baba Basra, is that one Masechta, or is that three different Masechtas? Now the truth is the names of the Masechtas actually tell you what the Pshat is, of course. Baba Kama means first section, Baba Metzia means middle section, Baba Basra means last section. In fact, if you look in the manuscripts, the Mishnah manuscripts from Eretz Yisrael, Ksaviyat Kausman and Ksaviyat Parma 138, you'll see that it's Prakim 1 through 30. There's no actually break at all between the Masechtas. In fact, Sanhedrin and Makos are also one Masechta, which is pretty obvious, actually, when you look at the end of Sanhedrin and the beginning of Makos. So the Gemara has a machlokas about whether or not Maseches Nezikin is really Kula Chada Masechta or it's multiple Masechtas. But if you want better proof that, of course, it's Chada Masechta, at least according to the Pshat, you realize that Maseches Bava Basra really should have begun with the last Mishnah of a last parak of Bava Metzia, Habayis V'Aliyah. The Mishnah that you looked at probably is, I think, the first day on the Mar Mikomos, is the beginning of what is effectively Maseches Bava Basra. And if you look in the Tosefta and Bava Metzia, you will see that the last parak or two in Bava Metzia actually overlaps. It's basically our parak and various things that are related and overlap. So really, our Masechta begins with the last parak of Bava Metzia. Tosos, if you look at the first Tosos in our Masechta, I didn't ask you to look at that, but Tosos talks about this. Tosos makes the connection between the two, but the Tosefta makes it really obvious the way it was broken up. Now, What is the topic of our Masechta? So there are a number of topics, but beginning with the last parak of the previous Masechta, that parak, Habayis V'Aliyah of Tu Shutfim, and going till the end of the third parak, the famous parak, Chezkas Sabatim, is all about Shutfus and Chazakos and establishing possession, which is a topic that we are going to somewhat obsessively focus on, really focused on determining possession when there's a doubt of who actually owns something. And then the next four prakim of our Masechta, 4 through 7, deal with what we would call contract law. Hamocheres Habayis, Hamocheres Hasfina are two of the prakim, and then there's contracts of digging graves, digging crypts, how many you have to dig, and so on, and various other things that all basically would be what we would entitle contract law. The end of the Masechta, the 8th and 9th prakim, deal with the laws of Nahala, which is a fascinating topic in its own right. And the 10th parak are the laws of Shtaros, Paraket Pashrut. So our Masechta really, really begins with Parak Yud of Bava Metzia, and that's where, if you're looking for Tosefton material, that's where you would actually find it, at the end of Bava Metzia, not at the beginning of Bava Basra. One thing that I wanted to say before we start the Maor Mikomos, and this is true about learning Seder or Meseches Nezikin in general, and learning about Dine Mamanos, and maybe learning in general. When we study these topics, so we are interested in establishing the law. We're interested in drawing lines. We're interested in determining din. This is not a blueprint for how one lives life. Gemara in Bava Metzia says that Lo Charva Daf Lamed says Lo Charva Yerushalayim Ela Al Shedonu Ba Din Torah. Yerushalayim was destroyed only because they done when they judged, when they adjudicated, they followed Din Torah. The Gemara says, what, they should have followed some type of Persian law, some other type of law? What do you expect them to do? Right, that's the reason why Yerushalayim was destroyed. So the Gemara then modifies or explains the statement to mean Ela shehemidu divreim al din Torah v'lo asu lifnei mishuras adin. The Yerushalayim was destroyed because it had to be. Yikov adin esahor. But the world can't function that way. And one doesn't live life that way. Rav Kook once said that, unfortunately, sometimes it seems like the ethics of B'nai Beis Medrash are defective compared to the ethics of the man on the street. And the reason for that is because you spend your time in the Beis Medrash, and which I think is important, obviously, and you're so focused on the lines and how you do it this way and how you do it that way that you kind of lose sight of the bigger picture of what it means to be an honest and ethical person. So you've worked it out so many ways, and oh, I found the loophole. And when people behave that way, firstly, it's mechal shem shemayim, and it kind of misses the point of Torah. The Ramban in Parshas Vaschana, it says Vasisa Hayashor V'Hatov. It's a very famous Ramban. He quotes Chazal, Zeh l'mishrus adinu pshara. Maybe another time I'll talk about it, but the bottom line is, to be a Torah true Jew, you don't just keep what's written in the Shulchan Aruch, you keep what's written in between the lines of the Shulchan Aruch. And that applies in every single chelak of Shulchan Aruch, or Achayim, Tirudea, Tevenezer, Techoshen Mishpat, every single place. So while we here are sort of adjudicating how we have to set the din, if you are two shutfim in a chatzer, the way you engage with your neighbor isn't what your rights or what you think your rights or entitlements or obligations are. It's how can we live nicely together and how can I help you in the same way that I hope you will help me. But we sometimes, in the context of the din, have to adjudicate what are actually the lines and what are the strict obligations. But that's a minimum in a certain sense, not necessarily an ideal. Okay. So we begin the first topic that I want to approach, and we're going to spend, I think, a fair amount of time talking about resolving doubts. Resolving doubts. I suppose that's there's a line. I don't know where this comes from, but ein simcha, you know, hataras hasfekos. I don't know where that line is from. There's no greater joy than being matir safek. You know, often you have times in life that you have to decide what to do. You have to decide what career you're going to go into. Imagine if you had a navi you could go to, it would give you a command from God and say, go this way, go that way. That would be really great. We don't have that luxury. Some people do. I mean, I don't know if it's always the right choice. It's called a Hasidic Rebbe. But the bottom line is sfeikos are something that we live with in life, and sfeikos is something we also have to live with in the law. And how do we, in fact, adjudicate between two parties with a claim when the matters are not entirely clear? This is true, by the way, a suffik, what I call metzias, and a suffik in din as well. But we're not really going to focus on the suffik in din. That is a fascinating topic in Choshen Mishpat in its own right. But we're mostly going to focus on what we'll call suffik and metzias. Now, there is probably the starting point of all this, and it might be considered the golden rule of all of Dinei Mamonos is what? What is the golden rule of Dinei Mamonos? Hamotzei mechaveru alav haraya. Right? In English, in English law or in American law, what is the expression? Possession is 9/10 of the law. Possession is 9/10 of the law. It's the same principle. So I'm going to ask you to do something a little uncharacteristic of me, which is I'm going to ask you, what is the conceptual underpinnings of that? I mean, it seems, well, I'm not going to say it seems. I'm not even going to bias the discussion. I ask that question, A, because it's an interesting question in its own right, but B, because Rashi says something absolutely fascinating, that Rashi in Baba Metzia, I'm curious to know what you thought of that Rashi. But before we go there, I'm curious if, and you don't have to, I hope you've given some thought, what is, we all know this, Hamotzei mechaveru alav haraya. Why? And Sam?
If it, like, you would assume that if I have it, it's mine, and if it was someone else's, they would care about it and kind of like take it back.
So we have an expression, that often is used in your Yoredeia. When we have to determine a doubtful situation, sometimes we have a process of resolving doubt that we call a hachra'a, and sometimes we call it a birur. What's the difference between a hachra'a versus a birur? A birur is a clarification. In other words, when the halacha, when we make a certain decision, we do so on the basis of assuming whether it's true in realia or we just act that way, as if we have clarified the facts. When we talk about a hachra'a, it means we remain with a suffix, but we have to have a method of moving forward. And therefore we say, okay, in this case we're going to do the following. We're going to be machmir, we're going to be mechmir. When we say sveika d'oraisa l'chumra, that's not a birur, that's a hachra'a. I have a situation where it's a doubt, whether it's asur min haTorah or not. I have to know which way to act. The answer is, I go this way. I have a sveika d'rabbanan often, and we say, I go the other way. The fact that I am machmir in the din Torah and make on the din rabbanan in no way clarifies, in fact, what the din is. That's just, you might call it a nihug. How do you actually act or behave? But it doesn't actually tell you anything about what is, in fact, true. So we can always ask that question. So Ben Sion was suggesting that I don't know which way you were suggesting, Ben Sion, but I would argue that it's a kind of a birur. It's a kind of a birur, right? In other words, if you have it in your possession, there are two possible reasons. Possible reason number one is that you're stronger than I and you grabbed it from my hands and nothing I can do about it. Possibility two is that it's in your possession because it's yours. And if you presumably, you know, if you go into somebody's house, it's a reasonable assumption that most of the objects that are in their house belong to them. Right? Just a, you know, it's a kind of a clarification. As opposed to saying, really, the fact that it's in my possession doesn't necessarily indicate that it's mine, but we just don't have a better way of determining. And therefore, you know, in effect, we always have a general klal, shevi al tasa adif, right? When it comes to many things, we say that if you're, you know, when in doubt, just be passive. So, okay, so you're possessing it, so I'm not going to take it away. Any other thoughts about that? Because Rashi says something, I think, very, very different than either of those two. Eli Melech. Okay.
But I do think this is kind of like the Talmud theory of right to property, is that what's yours is yours until someone can prove it's theirs.
I don't know why that necessarily means it's a right. I could just as well remember flip that around and say that to remove something from your possession would be an act of gezela unless there are clear grounds that it's not yours. Remember, as I say, the issue of rights is a mindset and a frame. The result is often the same, right? Your right to your property can be just as well as I don't have the right to damage or steal your property. I'm not allowed to. I don't have the right to. I have an obligation not to damage or steal your property, right? And so I don't think that. You're making it's a radical claim, but I don't think that you necessarily have to. You can get to the place that you're getting without having to, enter into that thicket. So let's first read the Gemara, because the Gemara itself is very interesting. I do like to ask people to read and share. If you are very uncomfortable because it's, for whatever reasons, reading, you should let me know privately, and then I won't call on you. Otherwise, you can expect that I might call on you and share, so you should be prepared. If you need to take a pass, you'll tell me you need to take a pass. I know we all have days that either, for whatever reasons, we didn't get to where we want to get. So I will take a volunteer at the moment. Who would like to read the Gemara Bava Kamma? I'll take a volunteer. Who would like to read? Shui. Okay. Let me just give my way. This is a very important sugya. I gave you, only reason I put what I did in print, you should know it, and it has bearing on what's about, what part we're going to read, but you should be aware of it because it's very much, I think, tied into the scope of Hamotzi Mechaver Olav Haraya. The Gemara quotes a machlokas Rav and Shmuel. I sell Yonah an ox. Why did Yonah buy the ox? Well, it could be because he has fields in Providence that he needs to plow. Or it could be because he's making a party and he needs some good rib steaks. Now, what happened? He didn't tell me why. I sold him an ox. This ox, to quote one of my friends, my closest friends, Rabbi Schmidman, Lower Marian Synagogue, likes to say, in this week's parsha, the Hayisa Mishuga is not a mitzvah saseh, as some people think. But this ox thinks that it's a mitzvah. This is a crazy ox. This is an ox that gores. It's a nagchon. And what happens? Yonah discovers this ox, and he wanted to be using it to plowing his fields. And he comes back and says, Rebbe, this ox is crazy. I can't keep it around. I said, well, you didn't tell me you were buying it for plowing the fields. I sold it to you on the assumption you wanted. You were making a big party. And the question is, and it turns out that most people who buy oxen in Providence, who come from Providence, they buy it for plowing. But some people buy it for making parties, for shechtin. Lenichsa is a person's l'ridja. And as Tosus points out, let's say the price doesn't tell us anything. We can't figure out from the price. And Yonah says, it's a mekachtos. I want my money back. Yes, you're sure. And I say, what do you mean? It's not a mekachtos. I sold you. You didn't tell me you were buying for that. So machlokes Rav and Shmuel, whether aslinan basaro by mamon. Shmuel says, ein hochem b'mamon acharo. Unless Yonah clearly stipulated, or unless everybody in Providence, Rhode Island, nobody, they're all vegetarians. So they only buy oxen. They only buy oxen for plowing purposes. So then Shmuel says that Yonah would have to prove the case, which he can't, and therefore I win. And Rav says no. Rav says we follow Rav by moment. If Rav people buy the oxen for the purposes of plowing, then even though a minority buy it l'nichsa, nonetheless, it's a mekach tos and it's choser. We paskin like Shmuel. Some of you are probably a little puzzled, which is an important question. All right, what's obviously bothering you to say in hochem b'mamonach harov? No. When you have a din Torah and you have three dayanim, what happens if two dayanim say one way and one dayan says the other way? Yeah, and let's say, and that does that work only if you're going to pater somebody or even to be motzi mamon? Even to be, it doesn't matter which way the two go. So what do you mean? It's only Rova the Dayan. So Tosus asks that question. There we say Rubo Kakula. A Beis Din speaks ultimately in one voice. But generally speaking, and this klal requires some modification. So, but the Gemara says it. Shmuel says, Ein hochem b'manach harov, and therefore, hamotzi mechavero ala haraya. That's what leads into this, now, this part that the Gemara is about to say, asking the question. So what does the Gemara say, Shui? Go ahead. Yigash alehem. So the pshat is Moshe says to them, "Bnei Aaron v'chur imachem." I'm leaving Aaron. Moshe's going up to Har Sinai. I'm leaving Aaron v'chur with you. Whoever has an issue, a bal dvarim, right? Ki yelohem davar ba'elai v'shafati ben yishuv ben re'ehu. Yigash aleihem. So they should approach them. So what does the Gemara interpret that as? Yagish ra'elem. Don't read it as yigash a binyan kal to approach, but yagish as a binyan hifil to bring something to them. In other words, if you're a bal davar, if you have an issue with somebody and you want something from them, you have to bring the raya. Yagish raya aleihem. So now we'll look what the Gemara says. Okay, so Rav Ashi says, what do you need a pasuk for? It's a svara. What's the svara? The ka'iv le ke'iva means if you have pain, you go to the doctor. The person who has the pain goes to the doctor. Now, the truth is, that maybe explains, that doesn't explain motzi mechaver lav haraya, that just explains why, if you want to get something from somebody, so you have to initiate a court proceeding, right? You know, if Eitan has my svarim, or I claim he has my svarim, and contemplating and philosophizing about my svarim that he has is not going to do me any good. I'm going to have to drag him to Beis Din in order to try to get the svarim that I claim back. See, but Rav Ashi makes it sound like it's a svara. It's purely a svara, right? Elimelech, that might come closest to where you are coming. Maybe. So that's what he says. So then the Gemara says, no, the pasuk, then what do you do with the pasuk? The pasuk is used from something else. I'd be impressed if any of you figured out what this means. Einis kachin al tovei atchila. It's a complicated siman in Choshen Mishpat. There must be like four or five different opinions that we've shown him what it means, einis kachin al tovei atchila. But bottom line is, you don't need the pasuk for motzi mechaver lav haraya. That's what the Gemara says. Okay. Now, what this would mean, taken as an absolute rule, motzi mechaver lav haraya, is that possession automatically indicates ownership. And that is true most of the time. But there are some broad exceptions in halacha. One of them that I do not think that we are going to deal with, I'm not aware of it coming up in the first three prakam of Bava Basra. I suspect that it belongs it's somewhere in Bava Metzia, is an uman. Supposing I am a jeweler, and I have your very fancy watch. I don't know, what's a fancy watch?
Bulova.
Okay, fine. I have your Bulova watch. And you have Aiden, that watch belonged to you. And I am known as a master watchmaker. And now I have a watch in my possession, and you say, give me my watch back. And I say, it's not your watch, you sold it to me. So would we say, Hamotzi mechaver ala haraya? So as a matter of principle, the answer is no. We don't say Hamotzi mechaver ala haraya. In other words, the fact that I possess it, normally we would say that I'm holding on to something suggests that I'm the owner. Here, the fact that I'm holding on to it doesn't suggest anything. You expect it to be holding on to other people's watches, because that's what I do for a living. Yes?
Except that a shomer is,
unless that's your job. I put up a sign. Shomer Sachar, that's my job description. I don't know, maybe the career center has that as a description or something like that. You know, I don't know. Is that being a policeman? I'm not exactly. Shomer Sachar is my job title. So under those circumstances, maybe. But I that's not typical. Uman does probably have the status of Shomer Sachar. But in Uman's purpose, you don't give your watch to the Uman to watch it for you, to guard it for you. You give it to him to fix it. While he has it, he has a status of some kind of a shomer. There's a certain level of achrayus on. On the Meir Mekomos, which you might or might not have gotten to, there's another example of where possession is not 9/10 of the law. Although, interestingly enough, it's very different than the case of Uman. Uman is focused, even though this is really terrible, I shouldn't do this. Is an Uman focused on the Chefs or the Gav? This is not a classic Chefs or Gav, it's just coincidental. The Uman is an issue of what? Is it the watch or me? that undermines the chazak, the general chazak?
It's
the gavra. It's me, because I'm an uman. You have an example of the Arakomis, and if you got to it, where it's not the uman, it's the object, which is the godros. Yeah, the godros, these animals that wander around under certain circumstances. There's no chazaka because the animals wander, and what else, you know, the fact that they're my thing doesn't indicate anything. Okay. Now, why is this issue so relevant to our first Mishnah? It's because of one Tosfos. It's not Tosfos' fault. It's the Mishnah and the Gemara and Tosfos. This Tosfos is so loaded. I imagine there are yeshivas in which you could take this Tosfos and spend the entire year on Tosfos, on just the topics that are addressed in this Tosfos. We're not going to do that, but we will spend a fair amount of time. But the issue that we're going to deal with is Lefikach im nofal hakosel hamakom v'avonim shel shneihem. I'll leave out hamakom for a moment because that's an odd thing. The stones belong to both. And the Gemara is going to make a comment. What's the Gemara's comment about that? Pshita! Like, yeah, there was a wall. I saw a wall between two chatzis. The wall falls down. We would assume that even if you weren't obligated, I'm skipping ahead. We weren't obligated to build a wall with someone. I see a wall between two chatzeros. What's my assumption? If I don't know one way or the other, I assume it belongs to both of them. I mean, it's possible one built it. So why would I think if it falls now and it's sitting right there in the middle, why would I think that one should have more rights than the other? And the Gemara answers, no. Why does the Mishnah have to tell us, Hamakom Havanim Shoshnehem? Why? Nobody got there? Because it fell on one side. You know, and typically speaking, although you saw this in the Gemara Bava Metzia, walls don't fall like Yericho's walls. They don't fall, you know, the ear fell tachteha, like underneath, sank into the ground. That's not how walls fall. Walls fall the way you tip cows, right? They fall this way. So the bottom line is that the wall is probably going to fall into one person's possession or the other. I don't know which one. So one would be tempted to say possession is 9/10 of the law. The Mishnah says nothing doing. This is the very broad exception which we're going to explore of cheskas hashutzen. Of cheskas hashutzen. In other words, when you know people were partners in something, then the whole game of chazaka changes. In other words, if I'm just a solo practitioner and I have stuff in my house, in my office, you assume it's mine. If I'm in partnership, I'm in business with someone, and there's stuff in my office that person says is theirs, you're not going to assume that it's automatically mine because it's in my office. And because it's expert, that's how shutzen work. We're in partnership. Even if it's on my side, let's say we have an office that's split. Paul's desk is on that side, my desk is on this side. If it's on my desk, it belongs to me. That's ridiculous. Of course that's not true. So the question is, under what circumstances does Cheskas HaShutfen present there being a Chazaka, a Mochzak? And are there any exceptions to that? And the Mishnah here is clearly telling us, the Mishnah says literally, because they have to build this wall, and they have to build this wall in the middle, Lefikach, Im Nafal, HaMakom V'Havonim Shel Shneihem. Both of them. Okay. Now, the Mishnah Bava Metzia, let's jump there. Okay, Ephraim, you can read. I'm going to ignore the last part of the Mishnah. Habayis v'aliyah shel shnayim shenaflu, shteihem chokim beitzim anu v'afar v'roon elo v'anam asis l'shtaber. How many cases are here in this first sentence? Strange. When you read the Mishnah, when you read the Mishnah the first time, and you read it with your chavrusa, or you read it yourself, what was your assumption? How many cases are here?
One.
It sounds like one, right? When you read the Gemara never says explicitly otherwise. But if you read the Mishnah really carefully, you'd realize the Mishnah is not talking about one case. Why not? What's that? In other words, you say you divide up everything, and then you see which stones. In other words, we have a bias in Aliyah. Okay, Yitzchak owns the bias, the main floor, and I own the aliyah. And the assumption is he built the bayis, and I built the aliyah. So the stones that were part of the walls of the bayis, and I forget how you deal with the roof, belong to Yitzchak, and the stones that make up the aliyah belong to me. The only problem is we don't know which are which. So the Mishnah says you divide. But then the Mishnah says, you look at which stone, now some of the stones are broken, some of them are whole. Now, if we had no idea whose is which, so we just divide them. But then the Mishnah says, you look at which way, which ones are more likely to break. I've actually seen the Rashi, I don't know if it's explicit clearly in the Gemara here. I have to look again. Tosefta seems to say the opposite of what, the Gemara doesn't say. Oh no, it does say, it seems to be opposite of the Tosefta, if you happen to look. But it doesn't really matter. The point is that, the way the Gemara is going to say is if the wall falls this way, it is more likely, I think, that the top stones broke because they had a much further way to go. Whereas, if you just think about the velocity with the stones hit the ground, I know this makes no sense to me in the physics. Any physics people will correct me, but if I have a stick that's moving, this part of the stick is moving much faster than this part of the stick, right? Because it covers more distance in the same amount of time, which means the velocity which this part of the stick hits the ground. And it makes sense intuitively. Chas v'shalom, when a person falls over, if you fall at your feet, your head is going to hit the ground hardest of any part of your body because it's moving fastest. It's totally intuitive and totally not intuitive. So the Gemara says, the stone's on top. If you go this way, that's the way the wall fell. Non-Yericho fall. So the upper stones broke. If it fell, collapsed. The stone's on top. Smash the stones below. Okay. So when you say, Rohan Elo Avanam Rios L'shtaber, that means you don't divide the stuff equally. It means you first figure out which stones like belong to whom. After that, you can't figure, the afar you probably doesn't matter, you can't figure out it belongs to. The eitzim probably don't break the same way. So, but the avanim at least. So why would the first part of the Mishnah say that cholkim ba'avanim? Not just the eitzim and the afar. And the second part of the Mishnah says, well, you look which stones are likely to break. Okay, so now, so the Gemara says, go ahead. Right? Yeah, why does the first part of the Mishnah say that you just divide it equally, randomly? Next day. Right. If it fell non-Yericho style, the Aliyah stones broke. If it fell Yericho style, then the lower ones broke. So the Gemara answers. Yeah, it fell at night. So if a house falls in the middle of the night and no one's there to see it, does it break? Okay, next, go ahead. Okay, very nice. We didn't see it happen at night, but you wake up in the morning, obviously the house fell, and there are stones that are broken, so just look. You can see whether it went timber or whether it, you know, got swallowed up. So the Gemara says, cleared it, somebody cleared out. You know, somebody was a little bit, you know, neurotic, and they didn't like the mess, so they cleaned it up. So then, the Gemara says, okay, so go find out who did the excavation and ask them, had the house fall? Gemara says. Okay, it seems like a lot of questions to get just to this, you know, end it. And man, for the answer is we don't know which way it fell. It was excavated already. Bottom line, there's no evidence, and that's why you split it evenly. If you saw which way it fell, and there were some broken stones and some not broken stones, and they could equally have been either one, except for you know the way it fell, so then you would distribute them accordingly. So then the Gemara says, okay, but why should we split? Go ahead. So why don't we see whose possession this stuff is in, whose property it has been placed in, and that person should be the one who's entitled to possession. Because, in other words, he can pick the better stones. So the Gemara says, okay, so this is very interesting. First, the Gemara suggests the Gemara wants to avoid the last statement, and it says, basically, it's not in anybody's rishus. It's not in one person's rishus more than the other. Meaning, it's either in a joint chatzah that they own bothly, yasvin b'chatzah d'tarvayu, or it's in the rishus harabim, so nobody, again, has a chazaka there, or shutfin anat makbid. In other words, it doesn't matter whose chatzah it's in. It's irrelevant. Because they're shutfin, and they're not makbid. So this is the first place where the Gemara is suggesting that there is no such thing as cheskas mama v'motzei mechavaraya when you're dealing with two shutvim as the fourth position. If I have shutvim, and presumably shutvim doesn't mean if I'm a business partner, if I'm in business with Eli Melech, you know, but there are golf clubs in my house. He doesn't get to say, well, you know, those are my golf clubs, right? Or those are shared golf clubs. It means things that are relevant to the shutvim. So we have an avayis and aliyah together. You're the lower tenant, I'm the upper tenant. The assumption is. These are these stones and these eights and enough are ours jointly. Eli Melech?
I feel like there has to be some limitation to Moshe Mechavaraya or Araya such that, in the sense, it has to be kind of actively in my position. Something that kind of finds its way into my property, you know, all the kind of models that we've touched on as far as how this works. Just because it's crossed my property line doesn't mean that now, like if I drop something that happens to be kind of rolls into someone else's property, and say, oh, well, it's mine now. Like, that doesn't seem to operate by the same
set of ideas. Okay, so the first thing you have to, this I think is very amply clear, and this is what's, I think, so interesting about Rashi. Chazaka doesn't work when A and C it move into your property. In other words, this is, the other wonderful topic, which many of you have at least encountered slightly, which you could probably spend months, if not years on, which we will not, but we will talk about it a bit, which comes into this is that three-letter word of Maseches Seder Nezikin. You know what the three-letter word is?
Migo.
Yeah, the word Migo. The word Migo is such an innocent-looking word. And the word Migo just means mitoch, since. But Migo is a very, very, very important principle in Dinei Mamonos. Migo, on a substantive level, is nothing, but at a proof level, is enormous. It's enormous. In other words, you're right that, in other words, if I have you, what would people knew to be your object in my possession, and it was yours, I could be, well, that's not the way I should put it. If let's say I seize your object, Eli Melech. I take your laptop, of course. I'll take your shtender. That's war.
Okay.
That's war. I will take his magic shtender, and then no one would believe me if I said you sold it to me. That's almost like me go Malcolm Eden, because like a non sabe, everybody would say there's no way Eli Melech sold that, you know. But supposing I have your laptop, and I seized it. Now, and nobody saw me seize it. So I claim you owe me money, but I don't have proof of it. And I say this is you owe me the money. And what am I do with your laptop? Well, I took it as a mashma. Now you say, well, give it back to me. I said, well, you owe me the money. So you say, well, that doesn't matter. I don't owe you the money. So I would be believed with amigo that I could have said, you sold me your laptop. Therefore, I'm believed to say that you owe me the money, and this is a mashka. So the question, obviously, there are limitations on chazaka, starting with, I gave you the umnus example, we gave the godrus example, and we have the shufis example. When Adam see something, when Adam saw your room for possession, the classic example the Gemara has in Shuos, right? If I see something in front of the great case, I steal something of yours. Nascha the Rabbi Abba. It's in Cheska Sabbatim also. I steal your nascha as a metal bar, a precious metal bar. I steal your nascha, and there's one aide who sees me do it. And the aide says, you stole that from Eli Melech. And I said, in chatfi, I did seize it. Udidi chatfi, and it's mine. So what's the halacha? The halacha is that there's an aidech and there's a meyeh that I stole it. And I could now. You might be tempted to say, "Well, I wouldn't say that." You could. We don't say amigo here. Actually, the halacha is that I have to pay. Why? Because since one person saw me take it from you, there's an eyanech and meyer that I have to take a shvua. The only shvua you can take, right? This is one of the three shvuas d'oraisa that you take kli nifter. One of them is a shvua seidecha. When two eidim would make me pay for doing this. One aid makes me swear. In order for me not to pay, I have to swear to contradict the aid. I have to say, Gabe says he saw me took your nasca. Gabe, you're lying. You never saw no such thing. Oh, hey, Dramel. I take that shvua. unpleasant. But I agree that I stole it from Elimelech. I grabbed it. Yet I said, but it's mine. He took it from me. So it doesn't matter, because there's an Eda who saw the Tfisa. And unless I undermine Gabe with the Shua to be Machashim, now, I can't swear, by the way, here you don't say, I can't swear that it was mine, instead of swearing that I didn't take it. But this is an example where your possession doesn't mean anything, right? Because when you see that it's seized, the whole idea of Hamotzi Mechavaraya, Cheskas Mamam, is I walk into a situation, and what I apprehend right now is this is where the property is. We're going to talk about a very famous Mishnah, which presents us with sort of a different kind of conundrum. Shnayim Ochazim Batalis. Right? What does Beis Din see when you walk in? That's, by the way, I have never seen that happen, but that would be comical almost to watch. Shnayim Ochazim Batalis. They literally have to walk into Beis Din, holding onto the talis in a tug of war. Not an easy thing. Okay. So the Gemara here does say that Shushfin Lokati Ahadadi, which seems to be a pretty broad statement. Now, when it comes to something, and let me again, there's a crucial point here. Yes, yeah, Benji, and then I'll come.
In this case specifically, why do we even need Shushfin, though? Because we're assuming that if you have a bayit and an aliyah, you both own the courtyard, but at least you own some metaphysical space in the air. Like, it's not that you're owned, like...
Well, wait a minute. There's no debate over... The only debate is over the specific materials. Who gets the broken stones? Look, we're going to go back and presumably rebuild. We're going to rebuild. I mean, that's the next Mishnayos in the Perek. Deal with rebuilding and terms of rebuilding and so on. So the only thing that's under dispute is, we all know that you get to build the bias, and I'm going to build the Ali on top, and you get to live in the bias, I get to live in the Ali. The only question is, we're going to have to get some of the stones that weren't broken, somebody can use. The stones that were broken, somebody can't. So the only debate is over the building materials themselves. Elimelech?
So even in the case where the wall falls overnight, there are no Aiden, I assume you could procure Aiden that would testify that the wall was standing the day before and it's not standing now. It makes it plainly obvious that the stones were not in this area before and they are now.
So the respond there, I'm going to invoke the Migo. The person who has in his possession should be believed to say that these, again, the debate is not over all this, it's debate over how you divide it. He could, Migo, that he could say he sold me all the material, he's believed to say these are my stones. It's only because they are shutfim, which is exactly the, I like the way you said it. What does it mean, shutfim? It means we know beforehand that they were shutfim. We know that this material, when we say there's no cheskas mamon of one shutaf against another, it means that we know that this was owned the shutfas. And now, one of you is holding it and claims the other person sold it to me. And wants to win on the grounds of a motzim chavaraya. And the Gemara is saying, that doesn't work. That doesn't work. If this were my phone, and then Isaac is holding my phone and says I sold it to him, okay, that's one thing. Why? Because when he tried to grab it, I would have protested, I would have screamed, and so on. But if he and I own the phone b'shutfis, the fact that he's holding it doesn't prove anything. Doesn't prove anything. Why? What? How did he get it? The answer is b'shutfim. Sometimes he uses it, sometimes I use it. That's not it. The possession doesn't prove anything. Yes?
Then would this case even be a motzim b'chaver el avaraya, or just be amigo in that case? I mean, would it even fall into the category of motzim b'chaver el avaraya?
No.
If we're not shutfim?
What's the note? The point is that you're claiming that if it weren't for this principle that shufim can't get a chazak against one another, we know this house was there and it fell. Now it's in my possession. So I claim the whole stones are mine. You claim that we should divide them. And I say I win because you have to prove it and I have possession. The reason, if you ask the question, why would I be believed if in fact we knew they were shipped before? The answer is because they're in my possession. I could claim, in other words, the fact that they're in my possession when we know they fell, but I could claim that he sold them to me. If I had said, if it weren't for this principle that I can't take possession, you know, of things for shukvas and then claim chazaka, I would say, that's very nice, Elimelech, you sold me the stones. So it doesn't matter which one's broke. You sold me the whole stones.
So then why do we have motzim b'chaver el avaraya? If
He would have the shittos. He would have had the veto. Why wouldn't he have let Smith have a raya in that case?
No, because the point is that you only can say the veto because you can only say lakuch of a yadi when it's biyadi.
Okay, so the veto relies on the raya.
Yeah. Okay. Now I want to take a couple of minutes. Any questions? Yes, please.
Rabbi said before that the problem with shutzvim is that it's sort of like the case of the umon in that just because one shutzv happens to have this item, so it doesn't indicate ownership. But the Gemara is, sadly, it's sort of saying something a little bit different. I mean, it's talking about a wall which is not going to, I mean, it's not a metalism. It's not something that's going to move. It's going to be in this kind of shutzv, that kind of shutzv. And it's just saying, so isn't the Gemara going to be saying something like different about the name?
No, but it did move. That's the whole point. In other words, what
so when I see the wall, is in his property, it's not like I'm not thinking, oh, it's probably because of Schutzpin, so he happens to have a wall. It's because it fell. I mean, it's not like a phone which I could have it, you could have it. This is not something that moves it. I mean, the wall is not something that moves around.
Well, no, but the problem is the wall did move. Right, the wall. We have a wall that we know was original. We have a house in an Aveh that won the Schutz. I mean, one person had one person had the other. Now it's all mixed together, right? So we know that this started out in joint ownership. We now know also that it's in possession of one of the owners. So I don't think it's any different than the phone. In other words, what you're pointing to is that when the wall is standing, when we look at the wall, that's not a good example because there everybody knows the bias and the aliyah. But the real question is when you look at a wall between two chatzeros, like a wall dividing a chatzer. What do you think about that wall? And that's really at the heart of the discussion of our Mishnah and the Mishnah, I guess it's just the entire first Mishnah. In other words, the Mishnah is telling us something about if you're obligated to build the wall with the person, then we make certain assumptions about the wall that we see standing.
Even if I assume that the wall is jointly owned when it's standing up, once it falls, why should I still assume it's jointly owned?
So here's.
The phone, it could, I could hold
so
the phone.
Of course you're right.
It's jointly owned, I could hold.
It's possible that. Of course it's. Again, it's possible that someone sold it. Right? Tosfos, by the way. No, I'm not spilling the beans. I'm going to be good at spilling the beans. Okay. So it's possible that someone sold it. But normally, when I'm holding a phone that's not a phone of Shutfis, if I have it, we assume it's mine. When we know the phone started out with Shutfis, and one of us is holding it now and claiming we bought it, so we say that you're not believed. You're not believed because... Now, normally, when you say lakuach hu biyadi about any object that was once known to belong to someone else, the reason you're believed is because hamotzei mechaver olav harai. By an uman, and by a shutaf, and by godros, you're not believed. In other words, the chazaka that normally allows you to say, it's mine... And we know it was Ephraim's previously. The answer is, yeah, I bought it from him. That chazaka that basically means the burden of proof is upon Ephraim, that chazaka doesn't hold by something that we expect to be in the possession, not of its owner.
That's one more
question. Sure.
Rashi, I think, explains...
Ooh, wait, do you want to talk about Rashi?
Yeah, Rashi here is saying something I think very different.
Ah, I want to talk about Rashi. This is a wild Rashi. It's a kind of, you know, if you're just trying to get through the sugi, you just kind of go through it. So everybody take 30 to 60 seconds now. Okay, but I will let you take first crack at it since you... But everybody take a look at Rashi again. What is Rashi saying? This is an unbelievable Rashi.
Okay.
Okay, so I want to translate. Lokati ahadadi lemikne reshusa didei. What does that mean? It's not. It could have been a little bit clearer, but this, I think, grammatically, only way to parse this sentence. What does it mean? Lokati ahadadi lemikne reshusa didei.
That is, because of the, it sounds like they're not mocked with one another about using their respective domains. So my own domain is not actually going to acquire anything for it.
Now, that is read correctly and translated correctly. That suggests something rather fascinating about Rashi's conception of cheskas mamon. What is that? You're still the man. I mean, you get first crack.
You're just acquires it for yourself.
What is that? What are we talking
about?
It sounds like a kinyan chatzer. It sounds like a kinyan chatzer. What is a kinyan chatzer, by the way? What is it? I know that this is a famous Ibai in Baba Metzia. But how does a chatzer work? What is the Gemara has two possibilities in Baba Metzia. It's a very, very important Gemara. On, I believe it's the Yud, or I think it's Yud or Yud base on a base. Yeah, which one?
It's on a base.
It's the Gemara about Chatzer Mishum Yad Yisrabai and Mishum Shlichus Yisrabai. It's relevant because it comes up because of Enshlech Advar Avera. That Raya plays in the role. But how does a Kenyan Chatzer work? Is it an extension of your Yad or is it your Shaliach? But I'm going to go for the moment with the Yad theory. I think that's the Gemara's Maskana, because Tana has a Yad, but Tana can't appoint a Shaliach. But Rashi sounds like Cheskas Mamon works as a Kinyan. You know, I spoke about Biur or Hachra earlier, but it's neither. It's neither. It sounds like the chazak cheskas mamon means that I choose to be kona, like a chatzer. It could be my possession, it could be my hand, my yad is kona. I don't have to be kona. You know, if I find this book on the floor and I pick it up, I'm not kona automatically unless I want to be kona. Right? I could choose to have my chatzer be kona, I could choose my chatzer not to be kona. So Rashi says that shutfin or lokafi azade limit the rishus of the day. Because you're mafkir, you're reshus lagabe chavre, leniyah sham chafatza. Elimelech?
Also, to what degree can a kinyan chatzer serve to acquire something that the owner is not necessarily being mafkir? No.
Nobody would question that if you put your object in my chatzer and we know it's your object and I decide I want to be kona, at best that can be a goslin. You're intuiting correctly. It's not that you can be kona someone else's. Rashi's almost, yes, Ephraim?
Is it like the same idea that's related to the Hilchos is like expanding the idea from Kinyan to our case? Not that this is
magic, is it? Well, Rashi says that the reason why, the Gemara says, shut from lokati adadi, and therefore you don't say hamotzi mechaver olav araya. That's what the Gemara says. And Rashi explains, lokati adadi mikne rishusi deide, afkori mafri le kochad rishusi megabe chaver lich near shal chafatz of Hilchos. In other words, so it's not, here it's a little bit, it's not exactly a kinyan chatzer. Rashi says that in order to be, motzi mechaveru, it has to be in my rishus. It has to be in my rishus. If I choose to allow my shutaf to use my rishus, you know, with abandon as much as he likes, and that means that it's not a my rishus; it's an our rishus. So Rashi makes it sound like that again. It's I don't know what you'd say that hamotzi works by being kona, but it has to be in your rishus. And in this case, by shutfin, it's not in your rishus. Because shutfin lo kafti adadi. It's like chatzer shoshneihem. It's like chatzer shoshneihem definitionally, not physically. There is a difficulty with this Rashi. What's the problem with Rashi? Not a problem in this Gemara. But what about in the other cases? It's hard to employ that logic by Uman. It's hard to apply that logic by Godros. Right? Presumably, the people there
You know, what the Uman has in his possession fully. We wouldn't say the Uman is mafgir, is reshus, legabe, the people who entrust him with stuff to fix. I don't think we would say that. So, according to Rashi, if Rashi is correct, the basis of not saying Hamotzevara by Shutfim is very different than that of an Uman and Godros. By Uman and Godros, it's an evidentiary consideration. I'll take Ben Sion's logic, which is the fact that it's in my possession suggests that it's probably mine. Because generally, things that are my possession are mine. Things that are not my possession are not mine. Whereas by Godros and Uman, if the reason why it's in my possession is because someone gave it to me to fix, or because these are the kinds of things that possession never indicates ownership. It's never an indicator of ownership. Whereas here, by Shutfim, it's something very, very different. It's not the fact that I have something of a Shutaf. It doesn't indicate anything, but rather because Shutfim, by definition, never have Rishus. It's never Motzi Mirishus Chaver. What's a Nafkamina? I don't like curious about Nafkaminas. What's that? But I think it's a definitional peshufis. You can't be makpid. I wouldn't disagree with you that you could have a situation. Shufim who are makpid. What do you call shufim who are makpid? Excellent. Right. And it could be not makpid and part of it. Like in other words, if you and I are shufim, how have we got to be shufim? We don't get along so well. But it's understood. You know, these three squares in between are the shufis. Don't you dare step onto my side. So on my side, we're not shufim. So, but I think the definitional, the shufis, is lokapti adadi. Otherwise, it's not shufis. So, I'm going to suggest to you what the nafgamina is, but you haven't seen it in the Rishonim yet. It's a subtle machlokas, I think, between Tosfos and most Rishonim. Well, I mean, it's not. You have to extract it. What happens if there is good reason to think that the shutaf might, in fact, be the owner? You know, in other words, we have some evidence now. What type of evidence it might be? Well, it's been sitting in that shutaf's possession for so long. You know, if we're shutfim, and you know, and let's say we have a fence in a backyard between us. So if the fence falls down, and I'm busy running around getting estimates for, you know, fixing the fence, or Pesach comes, so I'm a little busy Pesach buying more. So there's a reason why I haven't gotten it. Okay, it's one thing. What happens if it falls before Pesach, and now it's, you know, December, and it's still sitting over Shush, and I haven't done anything? Well, at a certain point, you know, if it were mine, I would have said, you know, can you please give me my stuff back? Now, if it's simply an evidentiary consideration of Cheskas Mamon indicates its probability of ownership, again, whether it's probability that we just make a definitive determination or probability because we're just not really sure what to do, so this is the way we do it. So then that probability can be overridden by the fact that it's been in my backyard for 8 months. You haven't come and claimed it. Now I say, I bought the stuff from you. It's mine. And you say, no, I didn't get to it yet. And I might win on the grounds that what kind of a negligent person leaves it that long if it were actually his. If you adopt Rashi's position that shutfim lo kapdim, that fundamentally when it comes to shutfis, there's no such thing. In other words, a shutaf basically allows, within a certain realm, certain squares on the floor game, the shutaf allows the other shutaf to be owner in. He doesn't assert his ownership. It's joint ownership. Then it's not hamotzi mechavero. It's not bershus one shutaf. It's not bershus one shutaf. This issue, even though it's not formulated historically, would appear to be a machlokas between Tosfos and most of the other Rishonim. The Tosfos you're going to look at, and most of the other Rishonim on our circuit. In other words, in Shahu Zman Harbe, would that ordinarily speaking, undermine a Cheskas Shutfus? Okay. Let's just read the first Mishnah Baba Basra, and then we'll stop with that. Ellie, you wanted to read. Okay.
Should have been Joe through us, so it's a Bechatzir, Bonin, and Takotel, Bamsa.
What is a mechitza?
A partition of some sort.
A partition of some sort. That is the, you might be aware, might not be aware, I don't know. If you've got read the Gemara, that's the first lashon in the Gemara. Strangely enough, it's not the one we possibly like. I'm pretty sure, having gone through the Bar Ilan, it's the only place in mechitza, certainly in the Mishnah, that doesn't mean wall, at least according to the Maskan of the Gemara. Right? Mechitza, you're looking at me, if any of you, have you seen the Gemara? You know, you don't, Gabe, you know where the Gemara is going with this? Now, the Gemara is going to say that mechitza means division, not a wall. Two partners agree to divide up their chatzar. We'll talk about all the ramifications, why it's relevant, and so on. But if you were reading, learning the Mishnayos on your own and you didn't see the Gemara, there's no way in the world that, I mean, obviously no way in the world, but it is not likely you would have said, oh, yes, mechitza here means they want to divide up the chatzar. Not with a wall, not physical division, but they want to make a, you know, they want to, you might want to say, you know, we sometimes say you want to partition something. Now, it doesn't mean so you put up a physical partition. It means, you know, when the British partition in their great wisdom, you know, the Punjab area between Pakistan and India, right? They didn't put up a wall between them. They just divided it. So, for the moment, let's not worry about which of these... It does matter, by the way. It does matter on some level which interpret how you're going to explain things. But shutrim shiratzu lasos mechitza b'chatzar. They wanted to, I would almost say, become oishutrim. They don't want to be shutrim anymore. They want to build a wall in the chatzar. You have your side. I have my side. Okay, so the Mishnah says... Okay, which seems to be a logical thing to do. We agree to build a wall to divide up our chatzeros. A wall is not, a wall takes up space, so it needs ground space, which is going to cut into usage of the chatzer. So we each contribute half. You build the wall right in the middle. Okay. Okay, so we'll talk, when we do the case, we'll talk about some of this. There are the two different materials that it depends on what the manner of the Medina, what materials did they typically build from it. And then the Mishnah is going to list how much each wall material, a wall of this material requires this many tefach. So what does it say? Okay, so when we get to the Gemara, we'll talk about those. Lefika, this is the punchline. So what does lefikach mean? Translate, not just the word. I know lefikach means therefore. Right? It's like I just gave you 600 details, and I say, therefore. Now, because of all 600, one of these 600? Therefore, if the wall falls, the makom and the avanim are shel shneihem. So what is lefikach? Because what? Why is it that the makam and the avanim belong to both of them?
Because they both contribute to build it in the first place.
That is a very parv
sitting
interpretation.
On the fence,
what's that?
Sitting on the fence with that interpretation.
That was excellent. Okay. Just note, Rabosa, I know the rule of jokes and shir. The rule of jokes and shir, should we are? If I make a joke, you don't have to laugh. If you make a joke, it has to be funny. Okay. Anyway, so the way the Rishonim are going to read, no matter which lashon of the Gemara you choose, because they are obligated to build the wall, and that's going to flow from the second lefikach in the Mishnah, because they are obligated to build the wall, the assumption is that they share the space, the ground space, and they share the building material. You divide them up. In other words, because they're obligated to build a wall, neither party can say, it's my wall. Which the Gemara, of course, is going to ask Pshita, and the Gemara is going to say no. Even if it fell into one of their chatzers. Go ahead. All right, so Ella, so what the Gemara will talk about what this means. Gina versus Bika. Gina is a garden. Bika is a field, you know, on the plain. In gardens, they grow vegetables. On plains, they grow grain. The difference between vegetables and grain, apparently, is vegetables are growing all year round. One variety or another takes a long time. The grain gets harvested generally in one season, you know, one shorter period of time. You know, it grows wrapped up at the end. You harvest it and so on. So there'll be enough. I mean, Mr. Gemara will explain.
Okay. But therefore, you can't force the other party. Elim Ratza, Kone Sato Shalobon, you can't force the other party. Therefore, you want a wall, build it yourself. And the Mishnah then says, and you make a chazis mivachot, some type of indicator, we'll talk about it on the wall. It's the best pun probably in the Masechta, which is my chazis. That's the Gemara's question. I'm serious. You get it. It's the Amorim have sent you bring on the Melech. Right? My chazis. Normally we say my chazis. What is it that you saw that you did the following? Here the Gemara is saying, my chazis. What is a chazis? Okay. When the Gemara in the first parak of Misachim said, the chicholda neviyahi, right? They had a sense of humor.
That was funny.
Okay. So, therefore, lefikach. Okay. With lefikach, because he built the wall himself, he couldn't force the other party, and he had this chazis there. Okay. And then the Mishnah concludes saying, okay, so if they build the wall jointly, then you make a chazis on each side, which the Gemara is going to ask, of course. Why bother with the chazis? Don't build any chazis. And anyway, this is what the Mishnah says. The entire discussion of the Rishonim is going to center around what the fikach, what is it that makes it. What is it, under what circumstances will be the case that the chazaka doesn't work here? Possession is not 9/10 of the law because they are shut. But that's what the Rishonim are going to discuss. So we're going to stop here. We will pick up on this actually on Monday, because tomorrow and Sunday we will have the kiyas, which means also you'll get to see, by then you should hopefully have seen at least some of the Gemara that's relevant on this. Any questions before I start?
Okay.